Well, if you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about
pop culture
that they like, and the first thing they'll say is the beat.
Get yourself addicted.
Welcome into the Pop Culture Pile Driver. Get addicted to the content and drugs. I am Jason Rossi. I am established to be here with you. That's not a proper way of saying it. I just felt weird after I said the drugs line. It's throwing myself off. But you can follow me across all social media platforms at Jason D. Rossi. You can follow this show over on Twitter at Pop Culture PD. No, we are not the police, but there's only so many characters you can put on Twitter, and it's a freaking cesspool. And it's the one account that I feel like we're not offensive or rude or mean in any single way. Personal accounts be damned. Again, give that a follow and it will make you instantly your life a lot brighter and smiler and happier. And with me, as always, my tag team partner in the podcast. Yeah, baby. I see you flexing those muscles. In the podcast sphere, he can be followed along some social media platforms at BillyD2411. He is on Twitter at BillyYee2411 because he's the bad boy getting booted off. He is Billy Biceps, Billy Haircuts, and he is discontinuing, like Choco Taco, his OnlyFans for a little bit. I've heard some weird rumors going on in the late July. He is a nasty boy. He prays to Bloody Mary. He has done all the nasty things in the world times two. He is Billy D. What's going on, man?
Hello. Yeah. Choco Taco, man, that caused a stir.
Can I?
Oh, no, don't do it.
No, let me say it first. Let me just say it. Do I like a Choco Taco? Not really. But it doesn't matter what I think. That truly does not. But I laugh at how the outrage of the world when these things happen, like, realistic, maybe you and maybe some audience or someone listening, when was the last time people really gave a crap about a Choco Taco?
Gave a crap about it?
Yeah.
I don't know. But like if I, like when we had the ice cream truck at my old work, either a Biggie Iggy or Choco Taco.
And Time out. What's a Biggie Iggy?
Oh, it's a ice cream sandwich, but it's like extra big.
So here's my hottest take about ice cream. So I'm kind of, my ice cream thoughts and pizza are very similar. I could live my life without them, but when
without ice cream?
Yeah, I could easily live my life without ice cream.
Oh, no.
I could. Like pizza is not like, it doesn't excite me like when I was a kid. I've kind of like, meh. I think pizza is amazing. It's the best food in the world, but I just, not for me.
It's the best food in the world, but it's not for you.
It just doesn't excite me. Like I'm just being
fair,
honest.
Right.
So I'm not trying to say it's crap. I'm not one of those people.
You're not like Kaufman who's never had one in like 20 years because his grandfather made him eat a slice like 50 years ago.
Yeah, him and his cheese bull crap. Yeah. I said this on The Dork when they were doing their share along. Like it's just not an important food to me anymore. Ice cream's in that same place. Don't get me wrong, Bill. Catch me on a night when we have ice cream in the house, or if we bring my son to get an ice cream.
We were going to the Dome all the time, though. I thought you loved it.
I was almost 300 pounds, Bill. I've loved everything. But the point is that I could live without these items. So whenever there's those like four items on the screen, and if pizza's one, or if beer is one, or if ice cream's one, it's like, can't live without, like, got to boot one of these to the sun. Those are the ones for me. Point being, though, ice cream sandwiches, I think, are one of the most undesirable piece of ice cream. I just don't like the sandwich texture.
What about a cookie one, though?
Yo, that's next level. Yeah, I'm all in on the cookie one. Okay, I'm in for the sticky, icky, ookie, ookie there, whatever that is. But the regular ice cream sandwich with the chocolate, like, I don't even know what you call that. Like, wannabe graham cracker that's not cracker
like
or
graham? I actually quite enjoy a nice one, especially if it's just a little melted. Just a little. Just a little
your
bit
fingers,
of like,
dude. It's like all, it's like all,
pretty much anything you're getting now with like ice cream, anything cold is gonna melt. So you're gonna get a little.
Yeah, but it's not about the melt. It's like almost as if it's like it like pastes onto your tops of your fingers, and it's hard to get off. If you can't just rub those little pops together, and little chocolate, you know, dust goes everywhere. Those things like stay on there.
Yeah, it does give you a little bit of a film, like not even the ice cream. It gives you like it like leaves a residue. I'll agree to that, but I do. So for me, ice cream is great. I love it. I have it a lot. But for me, it's an enhancer of brownies and cookies at the heart of it. Because now when I have a cookie, I'm like, I'd really like to dip this in some fucking ice cream or put some ice cream on this brownie. I'm all about that now. And, you know, I've made one too many late night Uber Eats to Insomniac cookies, which is far from me. So it's like a $7 delivery charge. It's like a $28 order without like any of the extra fees just to get it here. It's a little insane. And I've done it more than I like to admit.
Okay. So we're talking $30. And what do you get?
It's basically, so you got to get another, you got to get like 8 cookies total. So I have cookies for a few days.
Okay.
And it's like they have the perfect vanilla ice cream, not the one that's like completely white, but the one that's like a little yellow. Like a little.
It's like the buttercream. Like a buttercream.
See, the absolute white, like the chalky white ice cream, it's got that weird, like almost, like, yeah, like you said, like a chalky taste, but that, like, the creamy one is where it's at.
Yeah, a lot of people, so like Richardson's locally where we are, that's known for their like yellow vanilla, not yellow, it's almost like a tint of yellow, but yeah, because it's a buttercream that they use instead of like just the vanilla. And a lot of people say like Breyers is known for that really like white as a ghost.
Breyers also does like white mint chocolate chip ice cream. Gotta be green.
Wait, did you just say white mint chocolate chip?
Breyers, I believe.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think
their mint chocolate chip ice cream is like pale.
Nah,
big green. Like mint cookie crunch at the old Friendly's.
Mm. Okay, Bill, how about this? You, first of all, going back to that $30 order. So if you're getting ice cream and 8 cookies, that's in this day and age, that doesn't seem that bad.
It isn't, but sometimes there is an extra. Like sometimes I've paid a little bit more, that I'd like to admit.
Bill, whatever, dude. I can imagine you at about 11:30 at night. God knows.
Sometimes it's later.
The racing thoughts in that brain of yours, and being like, you know what? I need cookies.
I gotta satisfy some urge, and it's usually the one that I can lock down. It's a nice sandwich.
Listen, you're either sliding in people's DMs asking if they're up, and if you don't get a response, you're ordering cookies. I'd be the same way if I was in your shoes. If you had to like pick the like ice cream, like the Billy or whatever that we'll call it, Billy's Naughty Treats, what would like that ice cream consist of?
Okay, so it's already a thing, and I believe it's the Scoop and Scootery. They do like a grasshopper like thing. Because I'm a big mint cookie crunch, and I posted something on Instagram recently, and it is one of those things that is completely like you draw a line in the sand, mint cookie crunch, mint people this side, you know, every other kind of ice cream the other way. It's a polarizing flavor, but they do mint cookie crunch. They put like a brownie center. They put like the chocolate, like not even like sprinkles. They do like the little like chocolate like Toll House morsels, but even smaller, big swath of whipped cream, and I think they put in like a little bit of crumbled up, like really crumbled up Snickers bar.
Oh,
or it might not be Snickers, so I don't know if there's nuts in there, but it's like a crumbled up like some sort of candy with like a little, it could be a Milky Way. It's like a nougaty cookie thing.
Dude, that sounds real good. I'm putting that on the list. See, that's one I would devour. Do you remember the place Chandler's by chance? It was in Everett.
Oh my God. No, I only remember Chandler Bing.
Oh. So we used to work with them. They used to be part of like when I was at 92.9, there was an email that went out and you would get like 20% off for your birthdays. Anyways, so I had a really good relationship with them. I think there's still one somewhere. It used to be in Everett right down the street from where
Chandler's?
We were. Chandler's, if you look it up, like Chandler's like homemade ice cream or something like that. They allowed me to create one. So it was on the menu for a short, it was on like their like write-in menu. So like their specials, but it was called the Jason Rossi. It's in Peabody. There's still one in Peabody, I believe. It was called the Jason Rossi. It was mint chocolate chip ice cream, but I had them. It's mint Oreo ice cream. Let me rephrase this. So instead of the chocolate chips, it's Oreos in the mint ice cream.
So you're like the Everett Dale Arnold.
I am like the Everett Dale Arnold with higher socks and blacker shoes with shorts.
Jesus.
That's an inside joke. By the way, no, that was high fashion. The thing about Dale, everything he does works. Bill, everything he does works.
I mean, main legend.
Hell of a career. If you are listening to our voices, we appreciate you so very much. You can like and subscribe over on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate that if you're finding us on video platform. You can just search Pop Culture Pile Driver. This pops up in your feed when we go after we're live, which we record together. You can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Ghana. Shout out to our Indian listeners, or the listeners in India. Like and subscribe over on YouTube. Over on Facebook, we're a part of the Dork Shared Gooniverse. You can check out merch for the show over at TeePublic. Search Pop Culture Pile Driver. Also, if you are a fan, or if you're a breathing human being on this planet, hell, even an alien, and you like the show, I Think You Should Leave, which will be coming back for a third season. I've heard rumors are in early 2023, if not late 2022. It is in production now. What do you mean?
If it comes out in 2022, that will make my year.
It's projecting. So like Netflix has put out some stuff about their projected dates, and it's either December 2022 or early 2023. Because these things are probably going to be done within a few months, and then they make the decision when they roll them out. But you can check out That's a Chunky over on TeePublic too. If you are seeing us in video form, the images behind Billy are up and able to be purchased on t-shirts and other objects. You can check out franksishigh.com, how you can get involved and help with our nonprofit partner. And lastly, just be a good person.
And go check out Oh Yeah on Spotify.
Yes, our music.
And I believe the music video is happening August 20th.
Ooh, August 20th. That is a Saturday, I believe
Sunday, maybe?
Yeah, sure. It's a weekend. Just nailed it. And then outside of all that fun, warmth, and good times, Bill, this week it is SummerSlam week, the biggest party of the summer. But before we get into it, and instead of saving this to the end, just because it is such a hot button topic, we're living in a world where Vince McMahon is no longer involved with the WWE.
Yeah, that was kind of shocking. Was it before Monday Night? No, it was before SmackDown.
Yeah, it happened as soon as the stock market closed Friday. 7 minutes later, Vince McMahon publicly announced his retirement from WWE at the crisp age of 77.
So I claim it's because I did a video for WWE that day, Bragg. We sent it to them around that time. And then I texted the people in the video. I was like, I think we were just so good in this video that McMahon was like, all right, it's in good hands now.
We're done. We don't need this anymore. I don't need to do this anymore. DraftKings got me. That very well could be very much unlikely, as today he is now under official federal investigation for like $14 million that was used from WWE's funds in 2019. I guess they're releasing all of their fund, all of their like books from 19, 20, and 21. Obviously, 22 is still ongoing to see what money went where. And it ain't looking good for good old Vinnie Mac. But before we get the mob and the cancel culture all over him, I still am standby. Listen, did anybody expect him to just be the squeaky clean good guy? I don't think so, but he's still the reason we're wrestling fans. Everybody on this planet that is out there now, unless there's the few that are still like David Crockett guys or those Mid-South guys, but like WWE brought it to the masses.
WWE is Kleenex. It is the name brand of what people consider professional wrestling. If you asked a million people in the world what wrestling is, they would probably have some sort of WWE, Stone Cold, whatever.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan.
90% of them would be leaning towards something WWE related, except for the smart marks or really old people who only remember like the WWF or whatever the hell. You know what I mean? Like you said, like it's all about Vince. And my only take on this is eventually all things come to an end in this sort of way, whether it be dynasties in sports, football, or professional wrestling. It never kind of ends in a nice, neatly package unless you go out before you become the villain. You know, like the Batman quote, like you live long enough as a hero, you become the villain. And he was a villain anyways. And I've always believed absolute power corrupts absolutely. This guy has lived at the top of the game, the top of the heap, just doing whatever he wants. There's a lot of things we can point to throughout his career, Booker T and John Cena scene included, like where he lived a life that I don't think anyone else will ever kind of come close to with the way that he was able to operate for so long. And he brought us a never ending amount of great memories. And for that, I thank him.
Absolutely. That's what I like to look at. And I agree with you that that is it to me. He is the reason I'm a wrestling fan. What he was able to do, some of his creative ideas, some of his even on-screen characteristics.
I always say you separate the art from the artist. It's a little bit different from him because he's so tied into kind of both. Like, he is the chairman of the board, and that was also kind of the character that he played. Sometimes it's easier for me to separate it with, you know, like legitimately musical artists who I only would like Kanye. Like, I don't care for anything but his sneakers and his music. It's a little bit different with Vince because it's very tied in as all one, like his business is his entertainment and all, like everything is kind of all in one. But, you know, paraphrasing here, I'm going to comment on him from the times and the enjoyment that he brought me as a child, as a young adult, and even as an adult.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that's the hard part, especially when it comes to wrestling. If you go back to people such as Chris Benoit, who there's almost like this weird kind of revival for his work. But
exactly.
That's a hard one, though. I think that's
like Jericho said, I'm not talking about the monster who killed his family. I'm talking about the guy that I knew at the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's still hard to do the separating, I get, for people, because that is such a drastic situation. Even some people, like for me, I'm uncomfortable to this day. Michael Jackson, it's really hard for me to listen to his music, just for me. R. Kelly doesn't have as many like huge hits, so he's kind of easier to avoid. And I'm not going to lie, I still get down to Remix to Ignition. But
Step in the Name of Love.
Yeah. And then also like Gary Glitter for years, Rock and Roll Part Two.
It was in the Joker movie. I think if you were to start separating, like a lot of people are bringing up the Saudi League and all that stuff. Like,
yes,
if you were to go down the list of everything that you didn't like that was involved in everything that you like, you might be sitting at home on a log. Like you don't have a lot of options clothing wise, entertainment. It's very tough to be that vigilant about sourcing all of the stuff that you consume in any way, shape, or form. So I'm a little bit more liberal in that sense with those things. And I'm kind of, and I always go art and artist, you know, some people's are way worse than others. And if you have the take of, I'm not going to listen to this person or like this person anymore, more power to you.
Yeah, if you could do that, exactly. And like all the platforms we're even on, we don't know much about the people behind Apple or YouTube and Google and who's really running these things, but we digress there. But yeah, Vince McMahon retired at the age of 77, Triple H now the head of creative.
Awesome. That
should spell good things, even if it isn't overnight. Like Monday Night Raw, I watched the full 3 hours last night, very Monday Night Raw, but there were moments you just felt, okay, this seems a little more thoughtful, or this seems like the backstage stuff, or like Alexa Bliss giving a point of her future character, like little things that like, oh, this is why you're doing this. Cool.
And I always said Vince McMahon was Al Davis, ran one of the greatest organizations ever a while ago. And then as he got older, I always said, once Al Davis is gone, the Raiders will be a little bit better off for it. I always felt that way about WWE. He was kind of running it. You know, the storylines kind of ran into the ground at points. It was still too big to fail, but he's one of those guys where I think they'll be a little bit better off now that he's not behind creative fully. And the fact that Triple H is there, I like him a great deal. I don't, you know, think he's perfect, but he also, I believe it was on yesterday was the same day that he re-debuted at Madison Square Garden in that ridiculous comeback where he looked jacked as hell.
I don't know if that was... It was 20 years ago, but I don't think it was to the day because that was before the
Royal Rumble. Was it before the Royal Rumble? No, it was Madison Square Garden. Like, it was both at Madison Square Garden is what it was.
Yeah, he did come back twice. So I guess that's really the one against Kurt Angle, I think the one you're referencing, right, when he was just super jacked. I think that was right before the Rumble, but it could
be. That might have been before the Rumble. I think you're right. But either way, it was in Madison Square Garden like
20 it was ridiculous.
Years apart. Yes.
Yeah. So anyways, but yeah, just amazing, amazing stuff. So we'll see WWE again.
Oh, 20 years later, 2002, Triple H returns to Raw at Madison Square Garden. 2022, Triple H returns to Raw at Madison Square Garden. Now the head of WWE creative.
Amazing. It's going to be interesting, and I think it's going to bode well for a lot of the people that hung in there and a lot of these guys that we've seen get released that might – because of Vince, now take a little different approach. Is it going to happen overnight? No. But I think the next 6 months are going to be very, very fun to be a wrestling fan. And speaking of that, that's what we are. And SummerSlam is this Saturday. It is a pretty interesting looking card. We'll kind of touch on that a little later. Billy, you and I actually, before we get into the Podcaster's Dozen, the top 11 SummerSlam main events, attended SummerSlam 17 years ago. Sorry,
we did indeed.
Yes, 17 years ago. Bill, the best way to describe, so we were
camped out.
The only time I think I've ever camped out for tickets to anything. I've shown up early to things. I've been in line. I don't even know if you can do this stuff anymore, to be honest. But we camped out at the time, it was the TD Bank North Garden. Mm-hmm. And we were there. There was people playing Nintendo 64 on a TV. Mm-hmm. We were at a friend's party. And I think the best way to put this is we were sitting in on, I don't even know what we were. Do we even have chairs? Did we just stand?
No, we were sitting most of the time, standing, alternating, and we were going back and forth, seeing if we could name every episode of The Lost in order from season one on.
There you go. So this is 2005. So the show was a couple of years, a little bit deep here, and all the characters' last names. That was a big game we played to waste what would have eventually been close to 10 hours. Mm-hmm. But you get a little phone call, Bill, and why don't you tell people exactly what happened that evening?
So the preface before that was we were at a party where as many of you, like if you know me, you know if I drive anywhere, I don't have a drop of alcohol. I don't even take a sip usually. I might try somebody's like fancy drink, but that's about the length I'll go. We were at you know, a high school friend's party. You know, we were over 21 at the time, I think, right?
Yes.
2005?
Yes. It would have been actually, I think I was 20.
Okay. So like right in that area. I might have been able to drink. I don't even remember.
Yes.
Either way, I'm offered drinks at a party, and the guy who's throwing the party is like, "What is wrong with you? What are you, an effing P word? Why aren't you drinking?"
Are you a kitty cat? Are you a little kitty cat, Bill?
Why? I was like, "Cause I'm gonna be driving later in the day," and so we leave, and then I don't know, like 2-3 a.m. I get a call from my friends. They're all very drunk and said, "Hey, the kid who actually ironically called me names for not drinking at his party got pulled over with an underage girl, I believe, in his car, or a very young girl in his car, for drunk driving. And they were so drunk themselves, they needed me to bail them out."
Yeah. So Billy departs, leaves me at the garden, obviously the right thing to do, but he leaves and it's mere 3 hours. So he probably leaves, like you say, you've returned around somewhere in the 4 to 5 o'clock range, because the best part is you show up at a jail, right? Or like a city.
It is the state police barracks by Wellington Station, if anybody knows where that is.
So he's at a prison, basically. Mm-hmm. One friend behind bars, two other friends, or three?
Yep, two.
Okay. Drunk there as well. And they don't know how to even like talk. It was embarrassing, at least secondhand, hearing all this. And Billy does get said friend out. Did you get him out of there? How did that all work? And you drove them all home.
No, I believe I just drove him home. I think our friends made bad choices and drove themselves home.
That doesn't make sense.
I don't think they were actually like near the property, because they couldn't be. They called me to go get him. They weren't there when I went.
Oh, okay. For some reason I thought when you told the story that they were there and like couldn't like get him out because they were also inebriated, but I guess not being there makes more sense. Still crazy, dude. Whole thing is insane. But anyway, so that was our story. We end up getting tickets. We sit front row. If you go into the Peacock, the big old cock, and check out SummerSlam 2005, it is Chavo versus – who was that opening match? Crap. Was it Rey
Mysterio?
It might have been Rey. And there's me, a hefty boy of me, and a very scrawny-looking Billy. And I count the 1, 2, 3 because I knew it was over. You could see it right over the shoulder of the pinning. There is us. So we were basically, if the wrestlers are coming down the ramp, to the left when they're going up the stairs. Mm-hmm. And what a card this was. This was a Ric Flair versus Mick Foley I Quit match. You had Hogan versus Orton. You had Batista versus Booker T. DX versus, I believe, the McMahons and Big Show. Mm-hmm. Or something. That I think Sabu was in a crazy match for somebody.
He was, it was one of like the, I honestly, as a wrestling fan who didn't see, you know, Hulk Hogan ever as a child, like every time I went to the house show, it was the Macho Man one in this area. It was never the Hulk Hogan one. I never saw DX because I couldn't afford tickets at that time when I was a kid, when it was like the 90s. So I saw so many entrances and people that I loved that I didn't really get to see as a kid, as, you know, like a, you know, a young adult. It was fantastic.
Yeah. By the way, it was 2006. I apologize. Yes. Chavo versus Eddie was the first match. Big Show versus Sabu. So there it was. Hogan versus Randy Orton, which was Hulk Hogan's final match in WWE. Ric Flair versus Mick Foley in an I Quit match. And Mick Foley quit because of Melina. Stupid. But Batista Booker T, where Booker T powerbombed himself. Check it out. D-Generation X, Shawn Michaels, Triple H versus Vince and Shane. Edge versus John Cena.
What a card. These were all really good storylines leading into them. This was the Randy Orton RKOing Hogan on the car. This was the, you know, craziness with, I think the Spirit Squad was involved with the
that match. This was the year of the Spirit Squad. So, like, the McMahons brought them in. And this was, you know, again, just King DX. King Booker, exactly, who was the world champion going into this event. We, like we said, Ric Flair and Mick Foley, who in real life had a lot of heat due to each other's books. Chavo versus Eddie, not a major story there, but obviously a lot of family ties after the passing of Eddie. So there's a lot of stuff there. Obviously, Big Show, Sabu was ECW and just a crazy match itself. And then Edge, Cena, which might have been the feud of the year in 2006. So feud that was
a few years. That carried the company for a while.
Yeah, that was a good one. They just did everything but Mania. It's just weird how some of those things just avoid, like even Randy Orton and Cena for all the matches they had. But let's dive into it, Bill. This year, 2022, the year of our Lord, we are embarking on what I believe is the 33rd or 34th ever SummerSlam. So we're going to give you the top 11 SummerSlam main events. Let's kick it all off. We'll rewind the clock till 2002, 20 years ago. This may have been the best SummerSlam of all time. And it was capped off by The Rock defending his newly won WWE Undisputed Championship versus the upstart who had just been with the company for a mere 6 months, Brock Lesnar. And this was that passing of the guard match to really give this guy the put the absolute rocket on him. Becoming Brock won this match to become the youngest WWE champion of all time.
Yeah, this is the ultimate passing of the torch in wrestling. I would say, like, up there with, you know, Hogan the Warrior. This is a moment that it probably didn't have the build, obviously, because Brock was newer with the company. But this guy was a legit freak, built like you wouldn't believe. They do the double kip up in the match with... At the time, I probably wouldn't have hated. Now, if you do that, or the double drop kick, really, like, get the hell out of here. But Heyman was at a peak here too. He goes through the table. Brock hits the Rock Bottom, and I'll tell you what, the Rock takes a finisher like nobody's beeswax. When he takes the F5, he goes stiff and limp at the same time. Like, his body is like, it doesn't move, but it like falls to the ground limply. It's just like, it looks so cool the way he does it. It looks like he's like a car wreck victim. It is. Yeah. It's fantastic.
He did a great job. And the thing that I think was special about this match is they did a great job of the buildup in the packages more than like promos and stuff. This was like the Rock was getting ready in the ice baths. You saw Brock doing all the weightlifting, like simple stuff like that. You don't need all these promos. You don't need them attacking each other. Just two. It's the legit collision course of The Rock, who is at the time the greatest champion of the company, like the biggest face in the company had. And then Brock Lesnar, this young upstart who you just looked at and looked like a guy who was all the makings of a star. And just to think 20 years later, he's about to main event SummerSlam again.
Yeah. And Brock is still monstrous. But when you go back and look at this, the difference between The Rock now and The Rock then is 80, 90 pounds of muscle, maybe. He's like trim, young movie star Rock here, where now he's probably bigger than Brock, like by a good margin.
Yeah, because I think the thing, Brock did an interview with Pat McAfee earlier this year, that he doesn't weightlift anymore. He just basically maintains, eats a certain way, and does like very light weights to just maintain the look of his body. He doesn't want to injure himself. The same thing Bobby Lashley talked about once they pass 40, where I think somebody like The Rock, for his aesthetics, is more of a grind it out at the gym and probably
If The Rock got into the ring, I think he would tear 9 muscles.
Probably. Tight. Yeah, that's why we'll see if he does unveil. We saw him unveiled as Black Adam. We'll see if he comes back to WWE. I think that's another reason Vince McMahon may have retired as well. There were some rumors that John Cena kind of got cold feet. He's not at SummerSlam. Maybe they were getting cold feet from The Rock being involved. So
that's great. That's a good lead right there. That makes sense too. Like if you think about it, they're too big to be involved with that.
Exactly. It's only going to get worse. So take that as also potential. We'll jump to number 10. Now, this match, and even the first one, these aren't necessarily like the best wrestled main events here either, but I think these are just important as well. So our number 10 in 2005, the year before we went, it's Hulk Hogan versus Shawn Michaels. This makes the list purely because it might be the one match. Well, we'll give you a bunch to watch. All these matches are extremely watchable, but this match is worth watching because of the ridiculous childness. It really is. Shawn Michaels, when he returned in 2003, was reborn, born again Christian, new man. It took me 2 years later for him to be like, I hate this guy. Both of these guys are two of the biggest politicians in the history of the company. Two of the biggest babies, never wanted to lose, politic to never lose. And then they face each other, what was supposed to be, Bill, a three-match feud leading to WrestleMania the next year. Hogan says, that doesn't work for me, brother. Shawn Michaels says, fine, I'll lose. But talk about someone that goes stiff and limp real quick. That's how I would define this match.
I remember exactly where I was watching this match live. We were at the dockside in Malden. We tipped one of our friends, I think, like $400. It was a nice night for her as well. But this is Oversell City. This is one of the biggest oversold matches in the history of professional wrestling. And go back and watch it. There's some great memes from it as well. But even the ones that don't make the memes, like, he oversells everything. And he only had to dial it back about, you know, to like from an 11 to like a 7 to make it look pretty good. But I rewatched this match probably around like lunchtime today. And I was like, wow. Shawn Michaels went down a peg in my mind because at the time I thought it was hilarious and kind of awesome. And now I look back and I'm like, what a dick. And I know Hogan wasn't the nicest guy in the world, and they both have about 6 title runs, which speaks to them being dicks because they never wanted to give up the belt. Because if you're a big star in wrestling, like Randy Orton, like Triple H, like John Cena, like whoever, you have at least 10 if you're one of this level of stars, because you flip the belt back and forth because that brings up the business. These two guys kind of deserve this match for each other. But that being said, it's a fun watch.
No, it absolutely is. And I think you just said it perfectly. They deserve this, the both of them. Mm-hmm. Like, Hogan deserved to look like a Pete. Like, this was like the death of his career in a way, because Michaels, who could literally fight either one of us with no training and make the match work.
He can wrestle a broomstick.
He is arguably, in many people's eyes, one of the greatest of all time. I think it's undeniable, an in-ring talent, a top 10, no doubt, top 5, probably inarguable as well. But with all that being said, Hulk Hogan looked old. He looked bad. And Shawn Michaels
looked confused, too.
Yes, that was the best part, especially when he's hulking up and Michaels is kind of just like flailing around while he's hulking up, as if his hulking up is affecting him. It was it is an art class of douchery, but at the same time, it's a car crash. You have to see it. And so that's why it makes this list. Again, it's not a quality of it. It is just it's a match you never thought you'd see, which I thought is also equal. And we never saw again, as noted by said politic. And then Shawn Michaels came back and was fine and a regular guy shortly thereafter. Then we jump to number 9. This one could be a lot higher, you would imagine, but the match itself is okay. And there's reasons for that. But it's another one with the greatest build maybe to a SummerSlam main event. It's the Highway to Hell, 1998, Stone Cold Steve Austin defending against The Undertaker.
Yeah, it's a tight match. Like, they're both great wrestlers. Undertaker's great. It's two stars too, who faced somewhat often, but not as often as you would think two stars of this era. Like, they're not Brock and Roman Reigns. They're not Edge and John Cena. Because like, at that time, there were so many stars, and Undertaker was almost his own main event. You really didn't have to put him in against everybody all the time. Like, there was so many people to put in the main event, you didn't have to keep doing the same two guys.
No, agreed. And the other thing is, this is also like the storyline with him and Kane, which turned into like a much bigger story as we went on. But this, you know, the Undertaker also famously tells the story, and then Stone Cold has now confirmed it after years. Bruce Prichard has told the story that Stone Cold gets concussed in the midst of this match when they're on the outside. So I think that's what kind of took this match from, it's a hard hitting brawl for about 10 minutes. And then the next, I think this match goes a little over 20, is kind of just like lumbering through. And
I will say though, probably one of the best Undertaker spots is in this match, though. He is 6'11". You know, they bill him as 7 feet. And I think this is a string of every match after this, the announce table, the Spanish announce table at least, gets broken. He sets him up on the Spanish announce table. He climbs inside the ring to the top post, and he hits a fucking leg drop. The Undertaker to Austin. And he lands it perfectly.
I think later that might be the concussion spot. I think that might be it, actually.
I mean, it was like, it looked perfect, but I will say, like, his athleticism, because Seth Rollins, I don't know if like there's more of a gap now than there was back then, but Seth Rollins goes to do a splash in rib cages in one of the later matches on this list. The Undertaker almost overshoots the fucking table. Yeah. Like, his athleticism is insane for a man that size. It's a good match. I think it's nine for a reason. It's, but they're all great. So this is very good, but you could probably skip a few. Like, YouTube does a great job of like ebbs and flows. They show like the most like rewind. It's like Pornhub, where like it's like, you know, you can tell what the important parts are. Like, there's like little waves when you like click on the bottom. So like, you can go to all the important parts of these matches if they don't have a super cut for you. And yeah, it's a good one to rewatch.
And just a note on that Undertaker, just the difference of time too. Like, no disrespect, I'm not taking anything away. The Madison Square Garden, I believe, where this was held, a little bit tighter of an audience, but still, the Undertaker, regardless, 6'10 plus, over 320 pounds. That's scary and awesome. That's what makes this match great. And then just that second half is just, again, he's kind of, you can see now, knowing, you can look back and see that Austin definitely,
he's a little groggy
in himself. But yes, that is number nine from 1998. Now we jump forward. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the most recent, yes, it is the most recent main event to make this list, 2020 and 2021, not making the list, but it is Brock Lesnar defending his WWE Championship in 2019 versus Seth Rollins. This got a Dave Meltzer star rating of 4.25, and this is an incredible, this was everything we needed from Seth Rollins. Or when you face Brock Lesnar, that wrestle from underneath, that I believe you were here watching this at my house, honestly, Bill.
And he sold the ribs the whole match, too. One of his best matches.
It really might be, because he's so good in this match. Lesnar is the end boss of end bosses, evil heel. And Seth Rollins is the first that I can think of to beat him clean in the middle of the ring, 1, 2, 3, in a long-ass time for, like, that clean, like, no weird disruptions. Like, I know Goldberg had defeated him, and that was more of, like, a shock thing. Lesnar had beaten him, but that was with Braun Strowman in a main event to SummerSlam, I think, the year previous. But this match just had – was just awesome. Just really, really strong match, and really made Seth Rollins, I think, look like an absolute juggernaut of a star. And then really unfortunate, because until really recently in his new heel persona – has he had like this weird 2-year gap of just weird, awkward character moves and what happened after this. But this match alone, it's awesome to watch. And again, the star rating, whatever you think of Meltzer, that's fine. But this is just an outstandingly wrestled and fun storyline match all in one.
I guess you had to draw a line on what's 5 stars or not. To me, this is, you know, for what it was, a 5-star match. No, but in my notes, I say nobody flips out of a duplex like Seth Rollins. Nobody flips out of a suplex like Seth Rollins. He does it the best. He really does. Amazing. He's super athletic. They had a stomp, and within like the first like 4 minutes of the match, maybe even like two, like it was right at the opening. That kind of gets you into that, like, ooh, anything can happen in this kind of match. A lot of falsies. And again, announce table broke, frog splash from the post, and then hits a couple more. The ending's great. It's a really impressive match from Rollins. He still does a few things where he kind of like mails in some of the middle moves, but that's my gripe with him always. But and even Cole in this match. This is a great Cole match. Like he gave me chills at the end of this match. I remember watching. So
it's really good.
It's really good falsies to the end to kind of get you that win. And like you said, it's clean. 1, 2, 3, middle of the ring, off the stomp.
It's fantastic. And again, you also get over 13 minutes of action in a Brock Lesnar match, which you rarely get. You rarely get. And this was the cap off a pretty strong overall recent SummerSlam card. This is the one that had Goldberg versus Dolph Ziggler. This is one that Charlotte and Trish Stratus. You had a Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton match that ended in a stupid double countout, but the match itself was really good. And you also had Fiend, Finn Balor, where Finn Balor basically died and disappeared to then return to NXT.
And I believe this was the day at your house where you and Courtney just had like a never-ending different charcuterie board just coming out.
Oh, that sounds about right. We might have a little return of that this week. So now we'll jump into number 7. We rewind to maybe the greatest year in WWE from a creative or from a reality standpoint, 1997. It's The Undertaker, 2 years in a row headlining SummerSlam, versus Bret Hart for the WWE Championship. This was one of the many. The one thing about SummerSlam main events, there's a lot of special guest referees, and there'll be one this year, not in the main event, but Shawn Michaels was the special guest referee, and I think what makes this match special is that Shawn Michaels being the special guest referee was really important because if Bret Hart didn't win, he could never wrestle the United States again. Obviously, The Undertaker being the champion, so there was a lot of pressure put on Shawn Michaels from a character standpoint, then all the reality behind the scenes. This match is a brilliantly told match. It is so fun to watch. Obviously, the grittiness, Bill, whenever you watch those old, like, 90s, like, the way the – obviously, pre-HD. There's always haze in the crowd after an Undertaker entrance for way too long because I don't know if it was just the way that
– smoke.
Yeah, whatever they use, just like even like recent Undertaker where he still came out, smoke is like gone, maybe because the arenas were so big. But this match, I don't know, it's just so entertaining and knowing the reality of what was kind of going on behind the scenes where Bret within the next month was going to be told Vince can't afford him anymore. He has the belt and they had many ways to get it off. This leads obviously to the eventual Montreal Screwjob. It also leads because the end of the match, Shawn Michaels tries to hit Bret with the chair, but he ends up hitting The Undertaker, which leads to Bret getting the victory, leads to the very first Hell in a Cell, which also leads to the debut of Kane. Like, there's so much going on in this. It's a fantastic match, and I think if you are a wrestling fan of any time, it's must-watch.
Yeah, and it is Bret Hart at his Bret Hartiest. He's Canadian Bret, which is probably the strongest Bret, because it's his – to me, if he had stayed in the company and kept that character, he probably would go down as – maybe the greatest ever, because that was like his character as a babyface was what it was during that era. It was kind of just like need a babyface. He was good.
He was fitting for the time. I think in like the mid 90s. Once we get into that latter 90s,
Sting. Like he wasn't your prototypical babyface. He didn't have like that look, but he was great. But him as badass Canadian, top heel of all time.
Yes,
and this is again, these are two guys who faced off a handful of times in big matches. Yeah. And it made it special when they did. You know, they were both at the pinnacle of their careers. This was prime Undertaker. This was prime Bret Hart. Everything with Bret Hart is the best. He is truly the excellence of execution. Go watch this match. And it's just, you know, it's what I bash Seth about a little bit, where move to move, Bret Hart, it's just, everything's clean. Everything's real.
Yeah. And honestly, this also, by the way, is almost a 30-minute match, but it's all about the entertainment value. It's not like just a wrestling match.
Yeah. You get the slow counts from Sean. You get the back and forth with the chair. You get the miss of the chair. It's a lot of good stuff.
Also, this match followed Stone Cold and Owen Hart, which is the incident where Stone Cold was damn near paralyzed and also did eventually end his career. So that's also like a tough thing to kind of follow in a lot of ways, especially Bret after his brother being in that match. And now we'll jump to number 6. 2009 is Jeff Hardy defending his world championship versus CM Punk in a TLC match at 2009 SummerSlam. This match rewarded 4.25 stars from Dave Meltzer. This is basically the end of Jeff Hardy during his run here with WWE, with debut in TNA not much longer after this. This match, though, is absolute. Like, I did not watch this match during the time of this match coming up. I don't know why. I can't really specify what was going on. Like, this era is a little hazy to me.
Me too.
But I can tell you when I watched, and this match has been pushed to me many times, about a little over 20 minutes. It is Punk and Hardy getting the main event over Orton and Cena, which I think was a major deal at the time in general. You also had, this was a D-Generation X card. You had a lot of major stories throughout this time, and they gave these two the main event, and especially knowing Jeff Hardy would be leaving the company and kind of known for being a little flighty, even though he was their champion, put a lot on these guys, and they absolutely delivered one of the best TLC matches that were, you know, non-singles,
definitely singles.
Yes, yes, that's the way. Like, this, the only ones that really jump out to me is this match and Cena versus Edge, right after the one we went to in 2006. But these guys, this is like, you can tell Punk trying to really make himself here. And I think Jeff Hardy went a long way in doing so. And they put on, there's incredible spots, really dangerous things.
The Swanton onto the Spanish announce table is crazy.
Super high. That's like those super high ladders, like got to be 20 plus feet in the air.
Yes. And it's a Smarks dream, as you mentioned, like Jeff Hardy, right?
Mm-hmm.
CM Punk. You know, at this time, I loved Punk. And we all know that singles Jeff Hardy was a roller coaster at this time. I think it's shortly after this, he wrestles Sting drunk in TNA, right? Like, he's like out of his mind at this point, but it's in a good way. There's a ton, like, this match is filled with all of the spots you would want. And I think it kind of signals that you kind of do need the tag team element to these matches, because not everybody can take the punishment for 20 minutes. You can't have the same guy falling off a ladder 15 times. You got to spread it out.
And God forbid, if anything goes wrong, you have nowhere else.
Oh, it's over. See you later. Yeah. You can't, like, there's been a couple recently, I think, where the guy is just eliminated instantly because he takes a big spot.
It's hard because you take an absolute beating. One always reminds me, Dean Ambrose at WrestleMania 31. I think RIP Brody Lee, also both those guys during that match got absolutely destroyed because they put their bodies on the line, also knowing they weren't winning. So now we'll jump to number five. It comes the year before Hardy and Punk, 2008, Edge versus The Undertaker, another themed match. It's a Hell in a Cell. This got 4.5 stars, and this might be the least talked about Hell in a Cell match that is amazing. I rewatched this match. Holy crap. This was peak Edge. Undertaker in his, like, you know, kind of like gunslinging older cowboy, but these two, Edge literally takes all the moves here. Like, all the moves. He gets chokeslammed off the top of the ropes.
He goes to do old school, and he chokeslams him through two fucking tables, and it's not a nice landing.
No.
Into, like, that little area in between where the cell and the ring is. So it's a tight window anyways.
Absolutely. This match has it all, and I give, you know, Edge, I don't know where I put him in, like, the echelon of things, but you talked about selling earlier, or, like, what your issues with Seth Rollins. Edge, like, he's another one that full tilt into all these moves because he wants to make everything look good. He kind of came from that, you know, the match that made him a star was against Mick Foley at WrestleMania. And I think he knew then, like, how to make people look good and how to make his matches feel bigger. And him and The Undertaker went all out. And The Undertaker, another one who just will, like, try to kill him. So he did his little, like, whatever, flying cow thing into the cell. It's an insane match. Almost didn't need to be as insane as it was. But again, I love these, like the TLC and the Hell in a Cell, not at aforementioned pay-per-views. Like, these matches needed these stipulations for reasons. And Edge has been ducking The Undertaker for half of a year. Vicky Guerrero was basically sent The Undertaker to murder Edge after
they're watching on the TV, like during the match.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those awkward, like, just standing next to a television instead of, like, a locker room comfortable. But yeah,
I think they actually might have been sitting on the couch for that one. It's not like the TV on the screen, like, it's just, like, on two metal poles where they're just, like, looking at it.
So ridiculous. I think you're right, because I think this is also during Vicky Guerrero might have been in a wheelchair, like a neck brace during this time, because I think The Undertaker demolished her at one point. But either way, this at the end, sometimes the match is incredible, but the story after, The Undertaker chokeslamming Edge through the ring, and then fire comes out.
Mm-hmm.
What a spectacle.
Yeah, and these two are, you know, like you said, they're both, like, Edge is, like, 6'8", 6'9". Like,
it's cool.
So it's always great when The Undertaker wrestles, like, the Shawn Michaels, the Bret Harts, you know, even Austin's a little bit, you know, smaller of a guy, but him and Edge to be two heavyweights, basically. I mean, yeah, Edge is trim, but for them to put on this kind of a match, and have we done top 11 Hell in a Cells?
No. Could be something on Halloween.
just off the top of my head, you know, you got to give Mick Foley the one for, you know, just doing it crazy, even though it's not even a good match.
Horrible.
And then I go Michaels and Taker, and then the Usos versus the New Day, I think one of the greatest ones. And then this one probably.
Yeah, this is up there. And then there's a few others, but this is one that once you hear more about, like, there's a great Batista Triple H Hell in a Cell as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, once you like see this match, and you also knowing it's a main event of like a major pay-per-view, it stands out. And it is, again, on a kind of weird SummerSlam card throughout. But this is a really, really strong match. And
the other thing we should kind of underscore a little bit here is SummerSlam is the second biggest event in the company for them. I mean, we all consider it the Royal Rumble probably, but they, I think, would say this is, it goes like WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and then Royal Rumble Survivor Series.
Yeah. And yeah, now it's, you know, things are up in the air where you put all this, because Money in the Bank might be up there, but
up there. Yeah.
But yeah, I think this, and it's also because these are like the way it was kind of projected. If you listen to those Pritchard podcasts from back in the day when he would, you know, talk, it would be like, they thought like the budget, obviously these were the only two when it first started, but like people's finances to purchase tickets. It's like do a big show in the late or early spring and then do one late summer, because that's going to get people there. And I thought that's what, you know, made it great. And also the name is amazing. SummerSlam, just what an awesome name. Now we'll jump into number four, the return of Brock Lesnar to the list. And the first time, but not the only time, we'll hear from maybe the biggest star in the history of wrestling, John Cena, 2014. This match was rewarded 4.25 stars. I honestly don't know why. It's one of my favorite matches. And still to this day, I was sitting on the couch in my house, shocked off my ass. 16 German suplexes, absolute bloodbath. John Cena gets annihilated. I think the match actually goes like 16 minutes, which is
it does. Cena, I watched it today. He gets some offense in
early.
He gets a little late. He puts him in the STFU. It's kind of a panic move. It's not a complete total like 17 minute squash match. Cena does a great job of selling it. So we've talked about this one recently, I believe, in Cena's top matches as well.
Yes.
And obviously, since these are all such iconic matches, a lot of there's another one on this reference, I think the most out of any match we ever referenced, but it's a great Cena match. It's a great Lesnar match. And like you said, it's nice every once in a while to kind of pull the rabbit out of the hat and do something that they haven't done, which is Brock Lesnar. Like, he got beat clean in the ring. Cena gets pretty much dominated.
Yes, and that's what makes it very special, in my opinion. It is such a kick-ass match, and it's so fun to watch, too, knowing this is the year that Brock broke the streak. Cena had just won the title at the Money in the Bank that we attended in Boston, and as the story goes, this would have been Daniel Bryan. So for all intents and purposes, we all know what happened with Daniel Bryan for a few years. Thank heavens, because I don't know if we'd be still seeing our friend in the ring, Mr. Bryan Danielson now. But this is an awesome match just for the pure spectacle of it all. Now we'll jump into our top three, Bill. Brock Strowman. Brock Lesnar back. Bill, maybe he is Mr. SummerSlam. Maybe I'm wrong about who is and who isn't. But in 2017, this was the year I watched this event in Chicago for my bachelor party. I think you had already flown out that day on the Sunday. But this is a blockbuster main event. Brock Lesnar defending his title against Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, and Samoa Joe. Fatal four-way for the Universal Championship. This is – I don't know why this didn't get 5 stars. I think Dave Meltzer just doesn't like giving them to WWE. He gives them 4.75. Like, what are we doing? This match is amazing. Like, I'm not a big
– Carnage, car wreck, as they would say.
It really is all big heavyweights.
And they all move.
That's it. So this is the month after Great Balls of Fire. So we already saw Samoa Joe versus Lesnar, which – what a build that was. The match itself, okay. This is a month before, or a month and change before, we get Braun versus Brock. Roman and Brock, we've seen a few times. We'll see them for the millionth time this Saturday. But these guys put them all in the ring together. Like, Roman and Braun.
Roman's the small guy.
It's so weird when you look at it. He is. He almost looks lean.
And he's probably the guy who does the least aerial assaults in the match.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Samoa Joe is flying around. Braun Strowman's flying into the corners. Brock Lesnar, we've seen do a shooting star press. And Roman Reigns is probably the most grounded pound guy at the smallest frame. And it's just a heavy hitting, like, people, like, tables left and right going, like, announce tables going down. You know, Brock goes completely out of the ring at one point, comes back in, chair throwing. It's just, it's violence and carnage. It's, if you want to just see a match where big dudes beat the shit out of each other for 25 minutes.
Yeah. It's like 20, I think. Yeah.
It's a great match.
It would, it was incredible. The only thing I didn't like, my only critique storyline wise in this, because I remember this was such a dumb thing and they added like the Monday before, was if Lesnar lost, Heyman and Lesnar would have to leave WWE. Now, the reason they did this was because there was talks of Lesnar potentially not re-signing. This was like the end of his contract, because that's like almost Brock Lesnar's character for a long time was like, will he re-sign? Won't he? Is he gone?
Monday, right?
Yeah, honestly. And then this was one of those ones. I don't know if he just re-signed that day. I don't know the story there, but I just don't like those sometimes. I'm like, am I really supposed to believe that he's just going to be gone?
Didn't he legitimately do it Friday?
No. Yes, he did. Well, here's that story. So just quickly, at the Garden in Boston, actually. So I guess when Vince McMahon announced his retirement, Brock Lesnar left the building. Now, what that means, people felt like left, he walked out. So then he obviously he came back out on SmackDown and F5 Theory. And a lot of people like, oh, these insiders don't know what they're talking about. But no one reported that he left to go home. They just said that he walked out of the meeting that they were being held that he normally does not attend. And let's be honest, this is what Brock Lesnar is. Vince McMahon has made Brock Lesnar a gajillion to a multi-millionaire.
Just a multi-millionaire for just showing up every once in a while.
That's
like
what I'm saying.
It's like you would it's as I say to, if you run across somebody in an industry who doesn't do a lot of work but get paid a lot, it's good work if you can get it. I'm never going to bash a guy for it.
But that's what I'm saying. So like, think about the guy who just left and no longer will be making those calls. Now,
I think he wanted to make sure he still gets carte blanche. Like, he probably was like, all right, are you guys still going to pay me if I do whatever the hell I want? Okay, good. I'm still here.
Yeah, like honestly, am I still going to get those like, oh crap, break glass, we need Brock, here's $3 million to show up on Saturday? Like, they have done this with him many times throughout the years that like they're in a panic and they're just like, crap, we'll just get, well, all right, fine, $8 million, here you go. That's the story behind WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans. Like, they freaked out. They like the crowd didn't really want Roman. They didn't know if they wanted Brock, so they paid Brock a bunch of money. They went over to Saudi, like all that stuff. But so if you tell me that guy's gone, like Brock's like, well, screw this, I ain't working for anybody else. It's kind of like with Gronk and Tom Brady in an odd way. But yes, Brock is still back, and Brock was incredible in this match. All these men were, all of them were like just Samoa Joe stock, you know, after losing to Lesnar, you're kind of like, where is he going to go? And this made him look like a star. Braun Strowman, to this day, I still think he should have been given a major title run shortly around this era. I think he should have main evented that next year's WrestleMania against Brock. They kind of hotshotted that, as well as Roman versus Cena, which we were leading to. But those both happened at no freaking mercy, which is still blows my mind in 2017.
And the last thing I'll say about this match real quick, the fatal four-way, the triple threat, the five, whatever. It always makes everybody look pretty good because you don't have to stick the pin on just one guy. Everybody can get an offense on everybody. Nobody looks weak. So I see why they do this a lot. And this is probably, you'd have to go back and look, the best class of heavyweights in a fatal four-way ever. I mean, there's been great fatal four-ways, but the tonnage in this ring, it's probably a legit 1,000 pounds.
Easy. I would say
probably definitely easy. Yeah.
100%. I would think, yeah, because I think Braun was over 3. I'm guessing Joe had to be close to 3. Brock has got to be in the high, like 280, and I'm guessing Roman 245 to 260.
Because everybody on this list here can wrestle the hell out of a match. And throughout the years, you got the Hogans, you got a lot of Clydesdales in there where all these guys are thoroughbreds.
No, without a doubt. And the other thing, like you mentioned, like I'm just trying to think of the other, like the Mark Henrys, the Big Shows, Kali's.
All
like,
fine.
Kane, Undertaker, but I don't think they ever had a four-way with all those type of guys. And
no, because even the Rikishi one with Angle and Rock, those are all guys who are around like 220.
Yeah, Austin, Triple A. Yeah, that where they get thrown into the hay. So one of the weirdest spots ever. But we'll jump into number two, Bill. We rewind the clock 30 years. It's wild to think this. And maybe a weird trivia question involved in this, but we'll get to it. Bret Hart defending his Intercontinental Championship versus the British Bulldog in England.
And I think a lot of weird things about this match.
Yes, there are 80,000 people there. This match rewarded Wembley 4.25 stars from Dave Meltzer. I believe or this got to be under a handful of times that the Intercontinental Championship main evented not just any card, but I mean, not just like a SummerSlam, but any card.
Definitely any pay-per-view, even Raws for the most part. Like, it's probably happened more than we think, but definitely yeah. not on a pay-per-view. Maybe, maybe some pay-per-view. Raws.
Yeah, Raws be damned.
But sometimes, but like, honestly, not even.
But pay-per-view is the only thing I like. I was really, really trying to think. I guess technically WrestleMania 6.
No, but I wouldn't count that because it's going up against the other belt.
I know, but it was involved, right? And well, that's why I was going to include Backlash 2001 when all the belts, Undertaker mm-hmm. and Kane versus Triple H and Stone Cold, just because it's in the mix of it. But I can't think of a one-on-one or a multi-man intercontinental main event.
And also it gives you another thread of it was an outdoor stadium, which they didn't do super often. Even WrestleMania 8 was indoors in yeah. a big stadium, but it wasn't outdoors. So this was one of the better pay-per-views. This is one I will go back and watch often because Heenan's on commentary. He's killing a lot of, oh, I got him. No, he didn't. With Vince, what a maneuver. So it's a good commentary team. You know, Bret Hart is putting over at the time his, you know, his brother-in-law. And this is – Bulldog's a fine wrestler. Nothing wrong with him, especially at this time. No. He's a little juiced up. He's a little bit, like, stiff, but he's still good enough. You know, he's no what's his counterpart there? The other British Bulldog there. He's not the Dynamite Kid level wrestling.
Yeah, all right.
But well, RIP.
They're all dead.
Yeah, by right is fucking crazy. But go watch this match just for the Bret Hart clinic in how to sell, how to put over a guy. You know, it's a classic Bret Hart ending where it's a roll up where he like sits down on him to win Bulldog. And you know Bulldog didn't think of that. So,
no, and you know, Bulldog, as the story goes, was allegedly fooked, as he said, as Bret Hart told the story that
Bret Hart, every time he wrestles anybody, guys,
the other guy,
he was drunk, he was high.
Yoko Yoko couldn't wrestle at WrestleMania 10. He got him through it because he wrestled earlier in the night, which could all be true. But again,
Bret, it's always something with Bret Hart where
he's always the hero's
performance. Yeah,
I love him. But to the point though, if indeed true, regardless, even if it wasn't, Bret Hart is, you know, a master in the ring and had the idea of the match, and him and Bulldog talked about it days before. Bulldog shows up to the arena, allegedly no sleep, trying to, like, I think it was like Soma's or something to try to get itself through, not really working out. So Bret carries him through this match. Really fun match to watch. And the crowd, again, I think Keith has told me a bunch of times he really likes watching matches with insane crowds. There is not a more insane style crowd.
The crowd is insane, but there's no like ebb and flow a lot of the times to their noise. It's just noise.
They're jacked. Yeah. And let's be honest, here's why. The SummerSlam 92, aside from, as you mentioned, the commentary, is a big pile of crap.
I liked it. Pomp and circumstance.
You get some of that, sure, but you get Legion of Doom versus Money Inc., which might be the only other match. There's one other match worth watching, but like the endings of this match are so, this is like a WCW. You had Nails versus Virgil. You had Rick Martel versus Shawn Michaels, which is awesome, right? Ends in a double countout. You got the Natural Disasters versus the Beverly Brothers. You get Crush versus Repo Man. You get Warrior versus Savage, which is awesome. By the way, that's the other thing. This was for the WWE title, and they put it not even, you know, third from last, and it ends in a count out. Then you got Taker, Kamala, which what are we doing there? And then Bulldog, Bret Hart. And again,
I guess it's just underscores the point for me of Bobby Heenan is the greatest of all time because I could watch, like, he could put, like, he could make, you know, the Red Rooster versus the Brooklyn Brawler.
Nails versus Virgil. They did.
Yeah, he made it fucking like the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, especially Nails' character was still like absolutely hilarious. This is, I think, the year after he fought Big Boss Man in the the go to prison match. 91 was hilarious. But this match, again, just so good. Again, the crowd, the story, and the Bulldog winning the big one in his hometown, which, by the way, I don't know why this SummerSlam is in Nashville and not in freaking across the pond, because they're doing a pay-per-view called Clash at the Castle in the beginning of September in the UK. But I don't know why they couldn't just
Nashville's a great city, though.
I'm not saying it isn't, but I think it would have been really interesting 30 years later to go back to the UK for SummerSlam. But anyways, British Bulldog, this was his clearly his highest moment as a WWE single star. Had the only other thing even close to it was when he was the runner-up to the Royal Rumble 2 years later.
And maybe his highest moment.
And now we'll get to some honorable mentions before we get to our number one, Bill. Here's just a couple. Benoit versus Randy Orton in 2004.
Odd pairing, but yeah.
Odd pairing in a match when, like, I remember it very well because this is when Randy Orton became the youngest champion of all time. A lot of people believe that's because Lesnar walked out, basically left the company early in the year. But this match is really good. Like,
this is not a bad Benoit match.
It's hard to find them. And that's the thing. Like, I've been talking with, like, New Age insiders on Twitter. They're kind of putting their podcast back out there if you're a wrestling fan. Obviously, first go to the Jobber Knockers, take a drink. I did it. Take two. But there's all this talk about, like, Benoit right now and, like, watching his matches. And I just dipped into this one. I didn't watch the full match. I watched what somebody ripped of the WWE Network on YouTube. And this is good. And, like, Randy Orton, you can see him being, like, kind of, like, pulled to that next level throughout this match. Another one I had was Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar in 2015. Absolutely ridiculous ending with the timekeeper ringing the bell at one point. But these two, this is like the return a year and a half later from the streak ending. Another one of those just beating the piss out of each other. And technically the only time the Undertaker ever beat Brock Lesnar in a wrestling match.
Which is interesting because you think it would happen more often than not with the pedigree of the Undertaker. And their careers going on together longer than you would have imagined. Because the Undertaker, I mean, he's the dead man for a reason. He was around forever. And the fact he must really, and I know he does love Brock Lesnar. I know they're like thickest thieves. But the fact that he's only beaten him once.
And it was by that weird,
really,
like,
yeah,
technical.
Love this guy.
Yeah, so when Brock won the title in 02, he feuded with The Undertaker for a few months, beat him every time, beat him outside of this match in a Hell in a Cell a few months later. Then the Wyatt family, we had another Undertaker-Wyatt feud. And then two other ones I'll just mention. Both are triple threat matches. Nothing from the early ones. I guess I'll give a little shout-out to the first. It was Hogan and Macho Man versus, I believe it was Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant at the first SummerSlam. Tough to watch back, but, like, obviously the stars alone, very cool.
Match made in heaven, match made in hell, the wedding main event.
Well, that was 1991. That was Macho Man versus...
I thought it was just the wedding, and I thought the Sergeant Slaughter versus Hulk Hogan.
Oh, that is. Yes, you're right. Slaughter in the... Yeah, because that's the first ever pay-per-view I ever watched.
Elizabeth, will you marry me?
And the best part is there was a whole storyline thereafter with Jake the Snake and The Undertaker that you didn't know if you'd watch because they didn't do all that storyline to like wrestling challenges later. And I didn't see that till years later. So like the very first pay-per-view ever watched, 1991, that also had Nails versus Boss Man. Oh no, the Mountie, I think, versus Boss Man. Whatever.
That was the Spend a Night in the Slammer. I believe Boss Man Nails was the baton on a pole match.
There you go. So I think it was Mountie versus Boss Man at 91, the spend the night in jail. Mountie loses. Then the match made in heaven. As you mentioned, they get married to end the show. Bizarre as hell.
Well, Jake the Snake Roberts also puts a snake in the gift.
Yeah, but we didn't see that till later, which is unfortunate. And also, the storyline between Elizabeth and Macho in 91 there, they're already divorced at this time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is bizarre.
That's usually how all of these wrestling stories go, by the way.
Aside from Stephanie and Triple H, they were... just getting started, and then they got
still together.
And look at that. It all worked out. Sorry, Test, again, RIP. But again, speaking of Stephanie being involved, Triple H versus The Rock versus Kurt Angle, the main event of 2000 SummerSlam. This was should have been Triple H versus Kurt Angle, let's be honest, because of the love storyline. Of course, Shovel came out for this, allegedly, where Triple H didn't believe that someone like Stephanie would be attractive to someone like Kurt Angle. So they threw The Rock in the mix for the title, and it was actually a really well done match. This is Stephanie gets knocked out, goes to the back, Kurt Angle kisses her, kind of similar to what they were trying to do with the Hogan Macho Man without the kiss, but little seeds being laid. And then also in 1999, Triple H, Stone Cold, and Mankind for the title with Jesse the Body Ventura as a special guest referee.
All right, let's dig into one.
All right, so number one, we'll wrap it up on this. It took me a long time, and obviously I'm a huge stan, as they say, for one of these wrestlers, but this match is out of control good. This was John Cena can't wrestle to holy crap. John Cena is an excellent wrestler, and maybe he just needed the right dance partner. And most of the time when people say he can't wrestle, you look back and match, you're like, wow, he's really good. 2013, Cena defending his world championship versus Daniel Bryan, the handpicked opponent by John Cena. And this gets 4.5 stars. Again, should have been 5 stars by Dave Meltzer. They go 25 plus minutes. Triple H is a special guest referee. John Cena takes every move from a man that looks, in this match specifically, a hell of a lot smaller than him. But in reality, they're not as much smaller because the hair didn't quite get to the point where it gets over the next few months for Daniel Bryan. That just made him look bigger. The whole big beard.
Yeah, he's jacked up in this too. He's the biggest he'd ever been. Like, he's slimmed down, you know. The vegan warrior, even at the time, though, but he was like, he was look
thick,
balloon. He's ballooned up there.
And this is just really quickly, this is the debut of the, at the time, I think it was called the Berserker. I mean, not the Berserker, the Psycho Knee or the Cyclone Knee. This is the, when Daniel Bryan debuted the knee to defeat John Cena for the championship. Clean as a whistle.
I think this is the most referenced match. This isn't a lot of our lists for a lot of things. The John Cena list, you know, I don't know. Have we done a Daniel Bryan top list? This will obviously be on there.
Going
to my point that everybody has a great match with John Cena. And I hate to do this because it's Bruce Pritchard, but I do always agree with him when he says, you know, some of our wrestlers are a little too clean. Mm. Like, they make it look a little too pretty. Where John Cena, he's not... I think he's a fantastic all-time wrestler, you know, probably not top 10 skill-wise in the ring, but the reason I like his matches is because he's a little awkward. He's a little bit like you'd see in a fight. So this gives you one of the greatest technical wrestlers of all time who could work, again, like Shawn Michaels level, could wrestle a broom, with John Cena, who has a great match with everybody because he's, you know, big match John. And their styles, you would think, clash, but it looks really tight. It looks like a real fight at times. Triple H is great. The ending is great with the cash-in, which we've mentioned 100 times. It's a great cash-in. Orton the ultimate heel. So I figured this was going to be one, wound up being one. And, you know, most lists you look at, it's the number one because it's a, you know, almost a 30-minute story in its entirety. And it's great.
It is. It, like you mentioned, it's a coming out party for a future who became a mega star shortly thereafter. He was kind of bubbling under for a few months prior to this. And then him getting the nod from John Cena on that Monday Night Raw with all the whole audience. I'm sorry, the whole wrestling staff.
I remember that was in December, I believe, or it was in like.
No. This was in July or late, early August. Yeah, because this is what led to this match. You're thinking of the time when all the champions are in the ring in December.
Oh, okay. Because I remember being snowed in and John Cena like passing, like doing something for Bryan in the ring.
Yeah. That was that when all the that's when Orton and Cena were about to combine the belts. Ah. And they were in Washington and they didn't expect Daniel Bryan to get over and the whole crowd was like dying for him. But yeah, that was when Cena picks him out. This is why that whole story doesn't make any sense, how they didn't foresee pushing Daniel Bryan to the moon with all this or creatively. I can't wait for longer. But it they did. So there's something I can't wait for, like, the real stories to come out about that from the creative team at the time. But with all that being said, Cena puts over Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan looks like $1 million. You mentioned he turns around to his own little red wedding. Freaking red wedding of his own. Triple H hits him with the pedigree. Orton cashes in. This starts the storyline of the authority. This starts the Orton and Daniel Bryan like 10 match arc. This starts basically the run to WrestleMania 30 and the kickoff to the WWE Network and fans really being outraged with WWE not giving us what the story deserved to be, and that is Daniel Bryan getting all the glory and eventually kind of forced their hand to do so and lost CM Punk in the midst of it. Really, like, crazy butterfly effect stuff going on throughout this.
And probably the last great WrestleMania we'll ever have. Truly great.
I'll give 31. I think 31 is truly great.
Okay.
But that's my opinion. I 30 and 31 are the last two for sure. And this last one was really, really
good. It was excellent. It's as good as a two-nighter will be.
Yeah, but it's more – now they're more spectacles where then there was no celebrity matches. You know, they were – yeah, I think 30 will go down as one of the greatest of all time until, like I said, 40, a lot of pressure on them there. But, yeah, huge moments in 30. But amazing stuff. SummerSlam, always interesting stuff here. So, Bill, just very quickly before we jump out of here, let's just look at the card for this year. And we'll do quick predictions.
Actually, do you mind running through the card real quick? I'm going to lose my bladder for a second.
I was going to say, good, because I'm going to barely after. Yes, I will run through the card, and then I will get your take on it. So this year's SummerSlam is at, I was going to call it Reliant Stadium, but no, in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee. I don't even know the name of their stadium anymore. Wherever the Titans play. It is called just called Nissan Stadium. Sorry, Nissan Stadium. So this year we are going to get the Mysterios, Dominic and Rey Mysterio, Rey celebrating 20 years in WWE. Incredible to think back 20 years ago. That was his first SummerSlam versus Kurt Angle, which could be one of the best opening matches in the history of SummerSlam. But they're taking on the Judgment Day of Damian Priest and Finn Balor with a rumor. It's now a no disqualification tag match. Rumored that Edge will be making his return after some of the cryptic messages we've seen. You're going to get Logan Paul versus The Miz. The Logan Paul experiment is going to be a very interesting one. He's already hit Ronda Rousey levels, and it's only been like six weeks since he signed. You're going to get Bianca Belair defending her Raw Women's title against Becky Lynch, which I am so in on this match. Those two have incredible chemistry, and also what a story from last year when Becky Lynch made her shock return to beat Bianca Belair in 26 seconds. Bianca Belair had her hero's quest when she defeated Becky Lynch at WrestleMania, and now the two square off again in what looks to be a long-term story of Becky Lynch hitting rock bottom, which I will go ahead and say that I think will be this match here, and then Becky will eventually be forced to become a babyface again, and I think we'll finally get her versus Ronda Rousey at next year's WrestleMania. We'll see how those stories develop. I think the match that could steal the night, and one of the most anticipated matches for myself, is Riddle versus Seth freaking Rollins, just purely because these two are right in that perfect, like right under the main event, high, high mid card for the time being. I'm very excited to see those two get in the ring. I know Billy has said a lot of his issues with Seth Rollins. I think his character is on point. Him versus Riddle should be absolutely incredible. Liv Morgan defending her newly won SmackDown Women's Championship versus Ronda Rousey. This match worries me. I'm very intrigued by it because Liv hasn't hit that moment yet. And are they really going to beat Ronda Rousey?
No.
So I don't know if we're getting a DQ finish here. I don't know what we're going to do. It's going to be hard to make Liv look strong and then also have Ronda look strong. If it's me with the pencil, I do something where Liv kind of pulls a fast one somehow. Not cheating, but like something happens. I don't know if it's a Charlotte Flair interference. So then we get Charlotte.
If you do the match right, a babyface can use the ropes with both legs up.
I could see something like that, and then even make her seem desperate to keep her title, but as a babyface, I don't know. I have a feeling Charlotte's going to return.
Or, you know, maybe it's a good match for a while, and then Ronda puts her in a hold and then refuses to release her, and you get the DQ or something like that.
Oh, making her an official heel. That would be interesting because we got to go heel with Ronda soon because it is – I was mentioning Logan Paul a few moments ago. He's already become Ronda levels in WWE. Like, he could cut a good promo. They gave him, like, a talk show on Raw, bad. He's not a face. He doesn't come across as a face, and The Miz is so good at what he does to try to, like, to be a bad guy, but this Logan Paul ain't the guy that's going to – like, he should be with him again like they were at WrestleMania.
Or
like,
just be equally bad. Just be both – dicks.
Well, that's like, kind of
me and Kaufman going back and forth on Twitter. Two heels.
Right. Huge penis on Twitter is Bill. The Usos versus the Street Profits with the special guest referee of Jeff Jarrett.
Give me that all night long.
I have a feeling that so I'm in between Riddle and Seth Rollins still in the match, like being a match tonight, but I think this has it because these two teams have fought each other a gajillion times over the last like 8 weeks. We saw a great match at Money in the Bank. I think if this is like being on a massive stage like this, I think they really do have the opportunity. And this also could put another feather in the cap of the Usos, maybe being right up there for the greatest tag team alive. FTR have been doing crazy work lately, but I think in the confines of the WWE, there's nobody that can do what the Usos do.
Usos have rarely, if ever, been the third best match on a card. They're usually first or second. So I wouldn't doubt this is the match of the night or at least a second.
Bobby Lashley versus Theory for the United States Championship. I think it'll be another good match. I think these two do well together, but Theory's story with having the Money in the Bank and teasing this cash in for these last 2 weeks, it's almost like weird to have him in the card earlier in the night.
Yeah. I like the Daddy's Gone angle too. Oh, that was hilarious. I saw that.
Yeah, good credit to Triple H and the creative team just for like alluding to Vince McMahon in different ways. First, they said something about Brock Lesnar being the next to go. And then also, yeah, like your daddy's not here anymore. And then who's your daddy? Chance by the crowd. Gotta love a wrestling crowd. Pat McAfee taking on Happy Corbin. Pat is over is all get out. And I think this is a perfect spot for someone like Happy Corbin. My assumption is Pat will get the W over Happy Corbin, and this could turn him into Sad Corbin again. I'm hoping, because Happy Corbin's kind of stupid. And then your main event bell, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, Undisputed
Last Champion. Time.
Last time, last man standing, Kid Rock music playing in the background. I don't see Roman Reigns losing this at this point, and I don't want a theory cash in. I want to see this thing. I think we need a definitive end to the story sooner or later. I don't mind a cash in sooner or later with theory, but I just don't want it now. I assume if he does cash in, he'll fail.
Well, so, let me tell you, if he loses that match against Lashley, that's usually the formula for a cash in. So hopefully he wins it, carries the belt and the briefcase, which is always a nice look for a guy.
That would be actually really good storytelling. Like, mm-hmm. if he uses the briefcase to beat Lashley, holds both, and then says, oh, like, and then he can even tease about, I'm going to be a double champion. I'm going to mm-hmm. be this, or can put the United States title in the money. There could be some fun here. So there you go. You just made a much more creative decision than they probably will. So now that's not going to happen.
Hey, who knows? Triple H, man.
Hey, listen, I got faith in him. I got faith. It's just, again, Theory was kind of a quote unquote Vince guy. We'll see if the others, the powers that be now, continue to, like, even though he was absolutely destroyed on Raw for like an hour, which was hilarious. And he's such a good, like, that's a good way to build a guy like him, kind of like a young Orton in its own way. So we shall see, Bill. That is SummerSlam 2022. I think it will be a good show. If time permits and things work out, we will hopefully watch together, have a couple people over, have a couple of what kind of daddy soda are you drinking there?
What am I drinking? A little High Nooner.
Maybe a couple Nooners will be floating in the pool or in the out and about. It's been over a gajillion degrees. I have so much chafing out of my man tits, Bill. It's not even funny. But yeah, let's see what's going on in the rest of the Dork Shared Gooniverse.
Shared Gooniverse.
Well, Dork did Comic Con. Mac and Goo did the 1989 Classic Aliens. I believe that might have been a specialty show because they were on vacation. So ooh. I think they fell back on one of their classics there. CMM talked hockey equipment, and the fabulous Miss Maisel, TLDR, talked comics. And I've heard it both ways. Psych is doing the season finale on Thursday, and then the season 4 recap coming up week 4. The Twitchers are Shine Time and Dr. Joe Backcracker, and then the Dork Boys, Davey and Keith, be twitching on the YouTube.
Question for you, Bill. Sure. Comic-Con is a ton of news, obviously, there. Again, listen to Dork. They broke everything down. I know Mac and Google will do theirs as well. Are we in a position where is the MCU – I don't want to use the word jump the shark because it's a little too much. But is there just too much?
There is too much. Pigs get fat. Hogs get slaughtered. They still have an incredibly high batting average. We had this argument in the chat the other day. They've had like 4 or 5 properties where it's like, that was kind of a waste of my time. But they've had like 15 to 16 in Phase 4. And again, it's – technically Phase 1, so it's like building storytelling, and I don't judge it like a lot of people do, where it's like, oh, it has to advance the story, they have to do all of these this. I look at it as, did I enjoy the movie, did I enjoy the show, did I have fun? Sure. I did like 2 or 3 things I kind of stopped watching or didn't watch at all because of bad reviews, but like, you know, Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, if that wasn't an MCU movie, you would have walked out of that movie being like, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen. You know, if Thor was called, you know, Joe and his big hammer.
Whoa, I didn't see that one yet.
But like, if it was called Thor and his big hammer, you would be like, that was one of the greatest things I've seen of all time. But it's just in this, you know, Act 1 and coming after, you know, Endgame and Infinity War. They're not all going to be that good. I like to top my last work, but you have so many different directors, creative storylines, building up new characters, filling in old ones. It's not going to be Phase 3 every time. And I think we have to, you know, be okay with that. You know, the first act of every movie isn't going to be the best act. It's probably going to be the worst act. So
But I also think this isn't the, like, I know what you're saying, but I think the problem is that, like, they've set themselves so high that you want all these, like, kind of tie-ins with things, and then when they don't, you're like, what's going on here? And I feel like, for me, is there so much. Like, I didn't watch Moon Knight. I still never finished Loki.
Loki was great.
I know. I'm not saying anything's bad, but I'm just saying, for me, like, I didn't watch Miss Marvel. I don't see myself watching Ms. Marvel.
I think it was one of the best ones up there with WandaVision and Loki.
And Hawkeye? What about Hawkeye?
Hawkeye. So those would be the Mount Rushmore right now of the TV shows.
Okay, so maybe I'll get into it. I'm actually starting to watch The Boys, Bill.
What do you think?
So pros and cons here. Ready? Real quick. Uh-huh. Pro, I like it, and I want to watch more. Con, wife isn't bought in yet.
I didn't think she would. She might like Starlight as it goes on.
Oh my God. I just love, you know what it is for me? I love like simple, like boy girl storylines and watching. I'm still not good, but I know Starlight, I forget the guy's name, Yui.
Yui.
Those two in the first like four episodes that we watched so far. Big beta. I just want to watch them. I just want to see them get together. I just want them to love each other. And then with his ex, like the whole girlfriend, like that opening scene with the blood. This show has a lot of elements. I see why people have raved about it, things you have said about it. I know Dork has raved about it. I've seen their like reviews, same thing within the chat. I try not to, like Wes is really big on it too. I feel like, I don't know what happened in the latter seasons, but I'm just like, the first four episodes of the show are so goddamn good. And also maybe the best combination of violence, like mutilation, like bad violence, horrible acts by people you're supposed to like, horrible, like made me want to cry.
It gets worse.
And then also hilarious. The show is freaking hilarious. I don't remember. I don't even know the British guy with the beard's name in the show. I apologize.
Billy Butcher.
Okay, Billy Butcher. His Spice Girl reference in the middle hilarious. Of the subway fucking while they're
hilarious.
That's when I said, I'm in. So regardless of where my wife takes me with the show, I will watch this show. And it is because there's so much heart, but then there's also cold, malicious. Like I love Cody Rhodes and AEW, and people said he was a Homelander character. Now I can start to put those pieces what they meant together.
I wish I was in your shoes right now to be able to watch it with fresh eyes.
And Elizabeth Shue is excellent.
Smoking.
And yes, that as well. But she's just so good. Like the facial expressions and like the Homelander weird relationship that they have, he kind of like wants to be her son. I feel like I can't really like, obviously I know there's more.
Oh, baby.
But he's like very like, there's a lot going on there. And I already am concerned about some of the things that may happen that made me want to take my television, throw it out the window. Like I already did once with the plane scene, like literally said, no, they're not going to do this. And then when Maeve tells him how to save them and he's just like, yeah, I don't know if that's going to work.
What, like, what, like, fly up and down 138 times. Come on. Be realistic.
Why don't you fly out and push the head of the plane? He's like, well, then if it flips over the axle, like, I don't know how that works. I've never done that before. We got to get out of here. It's like, no, you know, you are a piece of crap. And then how he's so publicly good. Like, you know, if we were part of the military, like just amazing and cringeworthy and all the things, Bill. Show's good. So I am in.
I'm happy to hear.
Yeah, so we will continue to discuss that show as future. It goes on. But that is SummerSlam. Enjoy your week wherever you may do. Do what you do best and be the best you can be. And, Bill, any final words?
Army.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, basically, you should be Homelander. Or maybe not. Bill, any final words for our fine folks?
Slap it on a biscuit.
Frank says hi.